with electronic commerce and then move that question. Actually, right here. Back in work session on Senate Bill 660, Mr. Cravens has suggested possibly a resolution to one issue that was troublesome, and that was the one about definitions. And his suggestion is that if we look at line 4 in the dash 2 amendments and line through the words electronic commerce, comma, the internet, then the phrase reads, impose or collect a tax fee or charge on access to the internet or use of the internet. And I think that very definitely narrows the focus and eliminates the question of the definition of the word electronic commerce. That same phrase appears on line 10. And if we line through the same four words, electronic commerce, comma, the internet, then that line reads, fee or charge imposed by other state on access to the internet. So that also further clarifies and tightens the definition. The same phrase appears on line 14. And that would, again, focus only on access to the internet as the object of the bill. I hope that removes some people.
So moved.
Excuse me?
So moved.
I hesitate to use the words. Let's call those Scribner's errors in the drafting of the bill. Senator Minnis moves that we strike the words electronic commerce, comma, the internet, as it appears on line 4 and 5, line 10, and line 14. Any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. We are in consideration of the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 660.
Move adoption of the dash 2 amendments as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Minnis moves the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 660 as amended. Any objections to the motion?
I have a question,
question,
Chair. I think that's a great change on this amendment. So then in subsection B under section 1, then basically we are changing that to. So what happens if another state then, another state could not have a fee on access to the internet because we have a federal rule that says they can't. So.
And if that is extended, which we hope it will be, that would cover the federal statute.
So then what else does Section B get to?
That would be any other political subdivision, i.e. a municipality or other, or some maybe international that wouldn't be covered by federal statute.
Okay. And this, but this doesn't deal then with if they had a tax, if they had their own sales tax and asked us to help them in the collection of that?
Access only is the focus.
Access
only. Access to the internet is the focus of the issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Great. Any objections to the dash 2 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I'm curious about the notion of use versus access. What's the distinction?
I think the distinction would be, let me first ask, in what line do you refer, Senator?
It's on line 5, line 10. Access to the internet or use of the internet, line 55. Yeah.
I think the issue might be properly addressed by the question that Mr. Cravens brought up about bandwidth or frequency. So access, meaning just the connection in use, perhaps meaning the other definitions of the word, which could include bandwidth or frequency.
Could it include commercial use?
I think all questions of access would be covered by the amendment.
Okay.
Further questions? Any objections to the amendment? Hearing and seeing none, so heard. Then we have Senator Minnis is recognized.
Move Senate Bill 660 is amended to the floor of the Senate with the pass recommendations.
Senator Minnis moves Senate Bill 660 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions to the motion? Any objections to the motion?
Object.
The clerk will call the roll.
No.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Senator Minnis, would you like to carry the bill, or shall we let Senator
Atkins?
Senator Atkins will be the carrier for the bill, and that closes the work session on the public hearing on Senate Bill 60. Colleagues, we have before us Senate Bill 67. We'll refer to our good staff, Mr. Waters, to discuss and... Thank you, sir. Good morning. How are you?
Good to see you.
You need that check.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 67, as you will recall, has had a public hearing a couple of weeks ago, I think. And during the recess, I distributed a three-page handout which shows updated revenue impact for the base bill and then the three different amendments, which were also before us last time. By way of explanation, I'll explain what we have in this new revenue impact summary table. It shows for each amendment, each version of the bill, what the static impact is as produced by our traditional revenue estimating models, what the dynamic feedback component is, that is, what the effect of the behavioral adjustments as measured by our Oregon tax incidence model are, and what the effect of that is, the net of those two effects, static plus the dynamic, and then another component, which is the portfolio turnover effect. The idea behind this is that in response to a tax rate reduction, especially a capital gains tax rate reduction, holders of capital gains will increase the rate of turnover of their portfolio. They will sell more and more often than they would have otherwise. And this enables the state to collect an additional tax at the new tax rate on that increment on the additional portfolio turnover. So, for example, in the Senate Bill 67 base bill case, in the 2001-2003 biennium, it shows the static impact estimated at minus $304 million. This corresponds with the static impact we had before us in the draft revenue impact statement last time. There is a dynamic feedback effect of plus $4
million.
A net, if you add those two together, $300 million. And then you add the portfolio turnover effect, $54 million, to that. And so the total impact in 0103 of the base bill, including the dynamic effect and the portfolio turnover effects, is minus $246 million. The dash amendments produce different phase-in arrangements, so it started with a less steep reduction in the tax rate in the near years, then phased in the full reduction over time. And it also changed some of the timing arrangements, especially in the Senate Bill 67-3 case. Dash 3 case allows the reduced capital gains rate only for net gains realized after June 30th, 2003. So the intention of that and the effect of that is to effectively negate any negative revenue impact in the 0103 biennium. Similarly, dash 4 and dash 5 amendments are there for you to look at. The components underlying that dynamic feedback effect are presented on the next few pages of your handout, and these are results from the Oregon tax incidence model. And if I may explain briefly what we have here before us. The first block in this table labeled OTIM results colon feedback effect shows a static impact of minus $143 million change in the general fund. This is in terms of the base year for the OTIM model, which doesn't correspond directly to the base year for our revenue forecast period. But please bear with me for a minute. The important thing here is that it shows a minus 3.3% change in general fund revenues. Now, when you run this effect, the shock through the model, tax rate reduction for capital gains income through this OTIM model, it produces a new equilibrium. And in that new equilibrium, it has state general fund now going down by minus $138 million rather than the static $143 million. It also shows some other state other funds increasing by about $4 million, and local revenues increasing by about $3 million. So the net effect of all of those added together is minus $131 million. Now the difference between the static impact and the total impact is what we call the dynamic revenue change. And the dynamic revenue change is composed of really three components. There's the general fund change, the other fund change, and the local revenues change. I've shown you the general fund change and then the total change, including that. So the general fund feedback effect is plus $5 million, which is about 3.5% of the initial static change estimate. So instead of reducing general fund by $143 million, we're only reducing general fund by $138 million due to the economic behavioral changes in the economy. Total feedback effect is plus $12 million, which is an 8.4% feedback relative to the initial static change estimate. The last block on the table shows the economic effects, which are really the changes in the economy that underlie the revenue changes. For example, it shows that household personal income increases by about 0.16%. Net household income, in quotes there, which is really disposable income minus taxes that households pay on their consumption goods. This is what we're using as a measure of after-tax change welfare for this particular model. The net household income is shown going up by 0.28%. Gross wage index, which is an aggregate measure of an average of all labor income reimbursements in the economy, is shown to be reduced slightly. It's down 0.14%, whereas the return to capital index is up very slightly, 0.01%. These two effects, the change in the relative wage and the change in the relative return to capital, stimulate, one, the employment increase. Employment is shown going up by about 4,500 jobs, and investment increasing by about 19 million, or about 0.26%. There's also a small reduction in net consumer prices due to the reduction in tax rate.
Mr. Waters, I also noticed, could you comment on the gross wage index as well?
The gross wage index is a aggregate average measure of return to labor input in the model. It's shown to be going down very slightly, and the reason for this is that in response to an income tax reduction, households don't need as much total income in order to be as well off. So the model adjusts for that by slightly reducing the gross wage index variable. Really what it shows is that all other things equal, after this capital gains rate cut, the gross wages would need to be only, would be slightly lower than they would be otherwise without the rate cut. So it's not really showing a net reduction in wages, it's sort of a reduction in the rate of increase over time.
Senator Beyer, you conducted the hearing on this initially, so pose your question, then I'll ask you for a recap on where we got. I understand it was quite a good hearing, but your question, Senator.
Thank you. Ed, the investment in the jobs, I'm curious, does this capture that the investment would be made in Oregon versus selling stocks, investing in someplace else?
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, that's a very good question. What we've tried to capture is the effect on the return to capital in Oregon as a result of this tax change. Now, it's a little bit complicated because when we think of reducing the tax rate on aggregate portfolio of assets, mm-hmm. a lot of those assets don't represent holdings in Oregon. Mm-hmm. In fact, the vast majority of most people's portfolio probably do not include much by way of shares in Oregon-based businesses. The way we have accounted for that in the model is to show the change as affecting mostly savings directly, but not having a direct influence on investment necessarily. So the assumption there is that Oregon is it's a small economy. It's like a small open country. A lot of exports, a lot of imports. It imports its financing for investment needs in the state. It doesn't rely on a pool of local investment funds exclusively to finance, and it doesn't rely on the pool of local investable funds exclusively to finance needed investment in the state. Does that answer your question? So the impact showing here, this COVID-19, is Oregon investment in Oregon.
So the assumption is that the lower rate would encourage people to turn their investments, and that increase in personal revenue to the holders of those investments would be added to the Oregon economy, because the money would likely either be spent on other Oregon investments or put in savings and thus reinvested by a financial institution?
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, the assumption is that most of that portfolio turnover is reinvested in other assets, more or less in proportion to the share in Oregon versus outside Oregon as previously. However, there's also a component of local business asset turnover, so small businesses, non-corporate businesses would be easier to and more profitable to sell part or all of their business with this tax change to reap some of that return and to reinvest it in the state. That accounts for the increase in the return to capital index. So there is an inducement on the small business, small capital side to turn over your business or reinvest in your business, reinvest in a new business, and that accounts for the small but significant investment push that we're showing in the feedback effect.
And has that been demonstrated, Ed, as we put the model together? Is that just an assumption, or has that been modeled in some way, that, you know, studies that you've looked at?
Senate Byer, members of the committee, studies have shown that there is an effect on non-incorporated businesses due to this relieving of this lock-in effect, reducing the capital gains rate. OTIM is not really very well suited to do that directly, but we've made some changes in response to some research that is out there and some report that was commissioned and presented by AOI recently. It shows a positive impact on especially small businesses from allowing increased turnover of capital assets for small businesses.
As I recall, though, that was Mr. Connolly's study was largely theoretical. I don't want to impugn the study, though, but it was largely theoretical based on assumptions about the way, more on national assumptions of how capital is utilized rather than in a smaller micro market like Oregon.
Senator Byer, we have used, I think, some information, some insights from Mr. Connolly's report.
Mm-hmm.
To strengthen a portion of our model which was probably underrepresented, but we haven't incorporated all of the changes and assumptions that Mr. Connolly used in his research, in his paper. The effect is much reduced and attempts to and tries to incorporate the fact that Oregon is a small economy and not dependent on regional savings to drive regional investment, unlike the larger national economy might be.
Which brings us to our...
The prior question?
Yes, the prior question, which was... I understand that the hearing was quite good and that the issues discussed really reflected the benefits, the pros and cons of a capital gains reduction. And I think Ed discussed those with the economic effects. I think some folks are surprised at the results of the Oregon tax incident model when you look at the potential for economic growth in direct proportion to capital gains tax reductions. Perhaps more significant than people realize. I don't know what the ratio is of Oregon Economic Development Department's a job opportunity value. It used to be $12,000 or $14,000 imputed per job, but 4,500 jobs measured over $143 million revenue impact is probably a pretty good ratio. I haven't done the math, but that looks like a good value to me. But I guess, Mr. Vice Chair, do you have any a summary to bring or just observations to bring forward to this morning's hearing?
Well, we did have, Mr. Chair, we did have a pretty good discussion, and I think everybody but you was there.
Why didn't you move the bill? It was scheduled just for public hearing.
Other than instructions from the chair, absolutely not to move the bill.
Don't do anything exciting while I'm here.
I think we walked through Mr. Connolly's report and did that, and there were a number of different people, small business, particularly small business, a few people representing that perspective that talked about family transition and the effect on savings. Actually, retirement planning, the comment was made that many small business owners choose to reinvest all of their spare capital back in the business and build the equity in the business, and that is their retirement plan, and the problem or the inequity, at least from their perspective, of the trade-off of that. You know, if you work for somebody and put your money in a 401k, you can shelter that if you know, juxtaposed with a small business putting their money into business and selling it, then you don't have the same tax protections there. So that was an issue. And I think we had a number of people who talked about the impact on venture investments or seed investments in the state and technology companies. Certainly that's part of the New Business Coalition's emphasis on that. And we talked a little bit about the legislature's attempts in the past to redirect capital investments into companies in Oregon, into technology companies, and some of the tax law problems with that and how that had not worked because of lack of carry forward and restrictions on key industries.
Okay.
So a mixed bag. We also have some critical testimony on it.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I might, members of the committee, I might also point out there's another sheet on that shows the distribution effects of the tax changes in the base bill. And these show the change in household, the distribution of the change in household income and the relative benefits received by households in different income categories in the OTIM model. Column one of the table shows what the household income groups are, what the ranges, income ranges are. Column two shows the number of households or share of total households in each of those income groups. Column three shows the share of this net household income measure held by each of those household income groups. And the last two columns, columns four and five, show the effect of the tax rate change in Senate Bill 67. Column four shows the share of the total change in net household income received by each of the household income groups. So, for example, it shows that 61% of the benefit accrues to the households in the top income group, as you would probably expect with a tax change of this nature. Most of the capital assets are held by those in the higher income groups. The last column shows how this change in net household income compares with baseline household income for each of those groups. And the changes there are fairly modest. The largest change is for the highest household income group. Their baseline household income goes up by almost 1% or 0.9% relative to what it was in the baseline.
We have a work session.
Actually, we're in public hearing, and or will be, and there is one person who's signed up to testify. So we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 67. David Williams and Rich Peppers, please. Come forward. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Williams, and I'm here today representing the Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA is a union representing more than 19,000 classified professionals in Oregon's K-12, ESD, Community College, Parks and Rec, and Head Start districts in the state of Oregon. We are here today to speak briefly in opposition to Senate Bill 67. We have serious concerns that about the lack of revenue dollars for the state and the outflow of dollars from public services and the eventual cuts to public services that this bill would necessitate. I don't know how many members of the committee have seen, I know this was distributed yesterday by the Oregon Center for Public Policy, a study in relation to Senate Bill 67 showing the extreme regressive nature of this type of tax cut. And I would encourage the committee to look at it, and if any of the members do not have the study, I'd be happy to provide them with it. But I just, in sitting in the back, going through some of the revenue impacts, I was struck by the fact that at $500 million, which is what this tax cut could end up costing the state, we could give direct payments of $30,000 a year to over 16,500 individuals in the state of Oregon. That just struck me as an odd figure and a high number of dollars that could be going out in other ways in individuals. I'm not advocating that that be the way we distribute dollars, but it's certainly something to think about. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Williams? And seeing none, Mr. Peppers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Rich Peppers, representing the Oregon Public Employees Union, SEIU Local 503. And we're also opposing Senate Bill 67. We have basically the same concerns. We are not necessarily opposed just to a capital gains tax cut in and of itself. It's more in the environment that we're in that we have a concern. We think it's possible to structure a capital gains tax cut in a way that it would not have the effects that this one would. For instance, there are packages that are floating around the building that would create more of a revenue neutral impact if you package the capital gains tax cut together with other changes. Some of those things could be looked at as a way to keep the effect on, in particular, the general fund, but also revenue in general across the state more neutral. Realize some of the amendments have no impact on, for this bill, have no impact on the current biennium, or the next biennium, the 0103 biennium, but we would just caution that to phase this in a way that it most serious impact is down the road, just delays the difficulties that we will all face for a couple of years, but it doesn't avert them. And then I would reemphasize the points that Mr. Williams made about the regressive nature of this particular tax cut. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Williams, Mr. Peppers, did you have a chance to review the handout that included the Oregon tax incident model results?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we were just going over that in the back just now, and in fact, that's what spurred me to do the calculation in regards to employment, job growth, that the amount of dollars at a living wage that could be, the amount of jobs at a living wage that could be created through $500 million is different than 4,500 jobs, and but
say that again.
Well, $500 million.
Let's try and stay within the equation that we have. The tax incident model was cranked at $143 million for a net of $131 million after feedback. You could multiply that by 3 or 4 times. You wouldn't change the ratios. So
right. I only briefly looked at this, so I didn't do it with the $131 million. I was looking at more of the end impact of this particular piece of legislation.
Well, I was just looking at the personal income growth of $124 million, the net household income growth of $165 million, 4,500 jobs created, a 19% increase or $19 million increase in investment. It does show there is significant impact. That are positive impacts in the economy from a tax cut. They're not all just lost to the general fund, because there is some net gain because of dynamic feedback. But there's also the relative movement of the tax value to net household income. It's pretty direct.
Mr. Chair, we saw that. We did just get the same review you did on these figures, but. And we have to confess that the OTIM model is not second nature to us yet. I would also point out that the personal income and net household income growth, it appears from the next chart that most of the gain is at the higher income levels, and very little of it is distributed. Some of it is, but very little of it is distributed across the rest of the population. Over 60% of the gain goes to the higher income ranges. And that may stimulate some growth in the economy, but this may relate back to not being totally familiar with the OTIN model and how it works yet, but I'm curious why if this growth is there, why it is not then, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if there were going to be some growth in revenues to the general fund coming out of this personal income growth. And it seems that there's a little bit of positive feedback, but not enough. And then I think the bottom line here would be there's still going to be a huge hole created in general fund capabilities. And this particular bill doesn't look at a way to try and avoid those problems.
You know, I think that is a feature of a tax cut on capital gains, that the people that have the most disposable income are the ones that tend to be investing capital and earning the gain. But then I guess we could have the legitimate discussion about mechanisms to create more disposable income across, you know, the whole tax incident model and all the categories, so people do have the opportunity to have disposable income to invest. I'd like to see everybody playing capital games, at the, you know, even in the lower income brackets. And we're not going to get to that place unless we incent that some way. The lowering of the rate of capital gains is an incentive for people to invest capital.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with you that that is a worthwhile discussion to have, and that's why I made the point before that it's not the capital gains cut in and of itself that's our issue here. It's the impacts that we're seeing, and there would be ways to possibly package this in a way that the negative impacts are not so drastic. But that this particular bill doesn't look at doing that.
Last question, have you looked at the different amendments, the timing amendments and stuff?
Only, Mr. Chair, only insofar as this handout describes them, and I understand that there are, that certainly the dash threes delay the effect until the later biennia, but none of the different amendments really answer the question of how you deal with the huge losses to the general fund and the disproportionate impact, even in the later years.
Thank you. Questions for the Thank you very much, Mr. Williams, Mr. Peppers.
Thank you.
Is there any other person here present that wishes to offer testimony in Senate Bill 67? If not, we'll close the public hearing. Colleagues, we're going to be moving into a period of where we're going to need the cooperation and intense concentration of the entire committee. We only have a few days left of your new bill, so if the members of the committee have any further bills, or if you'd check with either the chairman or committee staff about bills that you need to have listened to or heard in front of this committee before we lose the ability to hear new bills, please contact me or the committee staff and do the best we can to get your bill before the committee. Is there any other business to come before the committee this morning? Hearing and seeing none, we will adjourn until tomorrow.